Well, let me begin with an attempt at definitions, more to make a beginning than to be particularly exact. It's obvious that in the younger generation, we have revealed in our day the fact that man is incurably and universally liturgical, because when this new generation looked for a term with which to describe themselves, they went to that ancient formulation, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. And so youth, then, is the is-now generation, squeezed between the as it was in the beginning group, which are those children who just do what they're told to do and they don't think anyway, and the ever shall be group, which is made up of the inertly content churchgoers, the insistent traditionalists. It's not, of course, completely true when you say this, that old expression about old maids like women drivers come in both sexes is probably also true about young people. I think that in a lot of ways youth has been highly idealized, because all of us who have passed through that stage remember that we weren't as set in our ways then as we are now. And therefore we conclude that someone must have done something wrong to us or failed to do something right by us when we were in that still malleable stage. And if they had or hadn't done whatever that something might be, we would be better men today. And from that conclusion, it's but a step along the rosy path to conclude that everybody who is still young, who is now, has tremendous potential for a much improved shall be. Youth is to be forced to be more realistic about ourselves, and that is a development to be avoided as much as possible. But I think that the facts of life about young people become very apparent when you take any particular group, and you can bring into your mind's eye at this point the youth group with which you work. Or if you need some other kind of sample, think of a group of young people from some Luther League or Walther League who wander through an institution like this looking the place over. There's been a process of selection, of course, that has gone on in the local parish before that group has been pulled together. The announcement has been made, we're going to have an opportunity to do this specific thing. And then there is always a certain group that comes together to do this. Now, whichever of these pictures you place before your own minds are, I think that you would agree that the biblical passage which talks about the Christians as being not many wise and not many very creative and not many very imaginative, all of these things can be used to talk realistically about the kinds of groups of young people with which we are often at work in the church. I think we need to be realistic as well about the fact that we're talking of sinners. Beyond that, we're talking about sinner saints, and the combination, of course, is one that's always going to and fro as well. They certainly are human beings with all the limitations that are implicit in humanity. They fit under every one of the anthropo, physio, socio, psychological categories. They span a tremendous age differential, actually. Even if you're taking that teenage situation, there is such a tremendous change between the earlier and the later ages. And they certainly are different. Different not only from one another, but they do remain uniquely different. Our age has done things to them that has made them different, probably in more ways than most of us actually realize. At the same time, we need to be saying the positive kind of thing which was apparent in everybody's face, I think, at the end of this afternoon's concert. I was at the back, under the gallery, and as the whole front section under the lights turned to applaud Abby, you could see that everybody loves youth. And of course, that type of youth is involved in it. But beyond this is a recognition, I think, of the fact that there is an openness, there is an eagerness, there is a possibility of being moved by the spirit that is present in young people that it makes us be very conscious of the fact that here is an important kind of group within the church. Well, if this is the first part of this matter of definition, let me pick up the term worship next. James White, in an article that appeared recently in the Christian Century, described the effects of our present generation, particularly the influence of television, upon the young generation. And he was describing the summation of all of this by saying that when young people come home from a church service where the previous generation might have said, "What was said?" now simply asked, "What happened?" And if this question is posed by young people in our day, often the answer that they will give is nothing, no matter which way you phrase the question. And as a result, a person has to be very careful about trying to analyze what exactly is going on. When they say nothing happened, they are of course making a judgment about themselves, although they may not realize. This whole principle of action in worship, which has been stressed by Dr. Brandt, would of course be present in the way they go at that particular question. This "what happened" kind of approach may well reveal an acute case of spectatoritis, that they have been there to watch, where the previous generation might have been there to listen, but in both cases they were waiting for something to happen to them. Valid enough, but unless it is countered by the determination to be doing something themselves, it reveals a misunderstanding of what is going on in the cultic situation. In any event, as we turn to an attempt to define the word worship, let me use that three-part division once again. Worship as it was in the beginning could be described in the Genesis terms of God being central to the life of all humanity. God being central to the whole of the life of every individual human being. And I think specifically, when one describes the garden, we might say that it was a good place to live, but the walks with God in the cool of the evening, this is what really made Eden. And not simply a certain path which they took, but the conversation that was going on. And this worship as it was in the beginning, the centrality of God and the possibility of mankind actually being in communication with Him. Not only possibility, but the expression of this, the constant living out of this relationship. Worship as it is now in Jesus Christ. God has regrouped mankind around Him, and what we describe as the situation in Eden is made again a possibility for us through Jesus Christ. Because He is present with us always, because the working power of the Spirit of God is present in us, we mortals, sinful but forgiven, can know His presence and can address Him. We are actually, in the midst of our frail mortality, able to reach through to be in correspondence, in communication, in conversation with the transcendent God who made clear to us how imminent He is in the incarnation of His Son, Jesus Christ. I think we need to take this word worship and say ever shall be too. The arguments about immanence and transcendence are probably not as acute for many people as is the basic argument about the existence of God, whether or not He really is. Whatever you call Him, ground of being, whatever you refer to as that God, we need, I think, to be seeing that Jesus Christ called Him Father and spoke to Him, and faith says that forever and ever, this is an aspect of worship. It is not possible to identify prayer with service. It is not possible to say that worship is only the expression of the sanctified result of what God has done in us. I think it is essential to see that as God is, so the specific action of worship remains as an activity in itself. Now, it would seem to me that one of the definitions that is as useful as any that I have come across is this one that describes worship as the all-pervading recognition of the absolute worth of God. It is all-pervading in the sense of going through all our life, involved in all of the things that we do. It is a recognition of the absolute worth of God, which is that easy tie-in to the word worship, but it is an all-pervading recognition. There is always the accent on the explicit acknowledgement that he is concerned, that he is reachable, and that we now, in recognizing him, enter into a relationship with him. If that be then a quick definition of worship as I would see it, one needs to add to this the sense of worship as we've been using it in a more general way in these past days. I would suggest that the liturgical expression, the corporate liturgical expression of this all-pervading recognition of the absolute worth of God, is that place where this recognition is focused at a given time and place and is entered into by a group of Christian people. I will refer to this more specifically as the liturgy or liturgical action. Worship itself, it seems to me, is more basic because it is here that the beginning to any kind of liturgical action must be made. Now, I define this word because the topic says reconstruction of worship through the youth. The word reconstruction, I think, again, strikes in our minds a kind of as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be problem. Usually, what is meant here is the fact that the as it was in the beginning generation is being sharply criticized by the is now generation, and by some of the has-been generation who assist them in recognizing what it is that itches, and that a variety of experimental things to do when you rephrase that, of course, is doings of their thing. A variety of experimental things to do are being undertaken from quite divergent theological and liturgical stances in the optimism that what shall be need not be merely what will be, but can be and better be better. And it's quite an optimistic kind of hope that by variety and new experimentation, we're bound somehow to light on something that is going to be better than what we are doing now. But since we're speaking specifically of worship, the adoring action, out of which of course come as well confession and thanksgiving and supplication, this is a more basic problem and needs to be the target which we attempt to meet as we're trying to build, to reconstruct a liturgical situation. Saying that once again, if we are hoping to reconstruct, to build up, to strengthen the liturgical action of the corporate group, I think our immediate target will always have to be recognized as the action of worship itself. Well, so much for the term. Now let me take this as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, generations, and define them in a slightly different way, and suggest a specific way within a given average, typical parish in which I would see an approach to reconstruction being carried on. We'll take a parish where nothing particularly can be done that is new, the kind of parish that a number of you have cited, where changes always bring a certain amount of reaction. I think this would be typical. I think in every parish there would be some who are along that line. And I think all of us would move with Bob in this sensitivity to the brother who is really disturbed. It may be a foolish disturbance. At the same time, we have a concern for this person. This concern is matched by the whole problem on the other side, where we find so many people having difficulty in being able really to accomplish anything in terms of what's going on in the particular liturgical celebration. I would read from Robert Hovda's article in the last issue of Worship, June-July, in which he is, the paper which he gave in Boston on the underground experiment in liturgy. He is talking about liturgies in general we have liturgies, he says, in countless ways, at parties, games, theaters. We celebrate at these places. But then these are not liturgies, he says, but they are celebrations. Liturgical celebration is and must be quite distinguishable from all these other good types of celebration. Christians, like their Jewish fathers and mothers, have always found it important to celebrate the meaning of life as men of biblical faith conceive it, in a kind of whole, complete, and total way by a rite called liturgy that acts out this meaning, lives it out in sign and symbol, touching the human person on every level of his complex being, mind, emotions, will, senses, guts. A rite that does not merely celebrate life in one of its aspects or moments or experiences, but that celebrates it totally, the mystery of dignity and purpose in life, of judgment over life, of love supporting life. Liturgy is a specific type of celebration, but it is a celebration. It should be. And the similarities between different types of celebration should be greater than their differences, because we are speaking of human social behavior, of how humans act when they have something to celebrate. But is that telling it like it is? Who in our gray and somber parishes thinks of Sunday Mass as celebration? A few experts, specialists, professionals, whose pride in their ecclesiastical lore is frequently matched by their contempt for the masses. No one else. No one else at all. I sit in the pews sometimes when I am not occupied in ministry, and it has been an experience of celebration only when the pews were folding chairs in a small room. Otherwise, I just cry a lot. I think there is a whole group of people who, inwardly or outwardly, are crying a lot. And of this tension, we are all aware. Well, into this parish, I will try to say terribly tersely, it seems to me there are, as it was, approaches and is now approaches and a hope for and ever shall be conclusion. The as it was group is one that we confront with a great deal of sympathy and a great deal of concern. I'm not only talking about people now who are not able to change, not this. I'm talking about all of the values, all of the high appreciation of the liturgical action, of the musical expression, of the words used in the text, the highest kind of quality of the traditional material with which we have been operating. I think that this should certainly be one of the things that we do not lose sight of, that we value very highly. And because I have talked about this to a number of you on previous occasions and have sometimes put this down in print, let me say very quickly, I would see three things that ought to be going here, and it's a terribly sharp fundamental dividendi, in home and school and church. But obviously in the home, there ought to be approaches whereby materials reach parents to help them make the church year something to live and make the service something to celebrate. These materials are something quite different from published volumes of anecdotes with holy thoughts. They're something quite different from long expositions of material to which a small little prayer is attached. This needs to be something quite liturgically oriented in the best sense of that term. I think that within the school, it should be recognized that if it is a parish day school, for example, no one ought to claim any longer that a school is a Christian school because it teaches Christian doctrine. They should recognize that it is a Christian school if it is a worshiping school. And if it's to be a worshiping school, this means that in the schools that are training the teachers, there must be an accent that will bring about the result of worshiping teachers, as well as qualified teachers who can work with the technique of involving the children in the worshiping action. This should spill over into Sunday school and vacation Bible school. It's quite obvious that the confirmation instruction needs to be geared in such a way that the children who move through this process into the celebration of the Eucharist, and who, most of them, under current situation, will no longer be involved in a study situation, need to be helped in that critical time to grow into the celebration of the church's year. Confirmation instruction needs to be oriented around the yearly, the weekly celebrations of the meal. Now, there remains the church. And here I would say that it is imperative that we begin to institute a family service. Now, the word is used in so many different senses that I must insist that what I am saying is that we should begin a family service the way I describe a family service, not the way anybody else describes a family service. Everybody else has that right to make the same kind of claim. At this point, I believe that I had best undergird this position by suggesting that we ought no longer hold as such a definite value the possibility of pulling a whole parish together. Simply to say it is to laugh, because we never really are saying what we are saying. When we say, hold the whole parish together, have them assemble as one family, we're obviously saying at least all of those who can fit under the particular roof that we have built. And as soon as we have more, we thank God, and then we divide the group. And we divide it without any kind of realism. We divide it by those who were out late Saturday night and so will come late on Sunday morning, or those who like to get it over with and come early, or any of these other reasons. And then we leave the flexibility that enables these people to move in and out so that if they don't like somebody in the late service, they can start going to the early service. And thus we dodge the whole area of problem, as well as the opportunity for community. Now, if we are going to be more realistic about what we're attempting to do, it would be possible for us to say, given three services, that you can join one of these three congregations. And then there would be some possibility, you know, of really working with that group to develop within it a sense of community and the awareness that they are the family of God. I think it would be possible to give visiting privileges so that occasionally the 8:30 boy could go there. But he ought to have a ticket, and it ought to be countersigned by someone, so that he's not just sneaking out of a case of discipline, you know, and coming in and celebrating here when he really should stay away from the sacrament as one of those evil livers who is in sin and intends to continue therein. Now, I don't think that this is the best way to subdivide the human race. There are other ways. You can subdivide them according to sex, which I have always said is one of God's good ideas. Sex, that is. But not to divide. I was at Perry County not long ago where they still have the galleries, you know, that hang all the way around, and they've remodeled the chancel to make it quite uninteresting at this particular church. But the galleries are still fascinating, and I made some kind of a gesture, like the boys are up there and the girls are up there, and I was directed by the local bishop who said, no, the boys are up there and the girls are up there. But they still maintain this particular kind of segregation in the gallery, when I could imagine that there have probably been reasons why this is still a sensible thing to do. But this is not the way, this is not really the way the human race was divided. I think that it is significant that when God created Adam and Eve, they were about the same age, I think. At least that was the condition of truth in the evidence. And if you really want to divide a parish into ways that are at least a little bit more realistic, I would think you actually would make the cut not between boys, girls, adults, and so on. I don't think that this makes sense. They don't live that way. They really live together, a man and a woman and children. And families make sense over against families. And so I would define a family service as a service to which are invited those families with children, probably up to the beginning of the teens. These people would come together to a service which is specifically designated as one that will be conducted for the benefit of the children. Now, it would be about time. I mean, it's like 1900 and some years that we've been conducting services for the adult, and we've been saying, let the child adapt. Well, now, one of these years we might pick up and do it for the children and let the adult adapt. A lot of adults are not good adapters until they become parents. When they become parents, then they take on a great desire to adapt. In fact, if you really are a Christian person, interested in the care of your child, what you would like to do would be to make a constant adaptation of what is going on for the benefit of your child. You would like to tell him, what's happening now? Or, now watch this. This is going to be good. And then try to get him involved in what's going on. But if everyone did this, it would be a noisy thing. So we announced this service as one that is aimed at the child, to which parents, good adapters, concerned Christians, are welcome to come. And the pastor, God help him, and I think he will, is to do the adaptation. He's got to be the person who, for the whole group, helps the child to become involved in what's going on in the service. Now, I would say very quickly that there are three things that he should be working with. Over the course of the year, you shouldn't dump the whole load of hay, you know, right away. But over the course of the year, he should help the children understand what it means to get involved in the action of worship. He should, in the second place, help them to understand where in the liturgical action they have the chance to do the specific action, which is worship. Now, if we would explain these two, you could do it with a case of adoration, for example. And this is not easy. But if you can help the child to understand, what does it mean to adore God? Really to be thinking of him with love and awe, appreciation, then you will have to move from that to say where he might do it. I think it would be possible for a child to be able to adore in the invocation. But if you're going to make it happen, you would both have to explain it to him. This is what adoration is. Show him the place where it might take place, and then brief him, groove him for the specific action. So that immediately before the invocation, one could imagine this going on. This is a terribly brief snatch out of a whole year. If you have said to the child, when we adore, we tell God how much we love him. You might do it a different way on a different Sunday. And when we tell him that, we can do it either with our lips or we can do it in our mind. But if we're not thinking at all, we're not really adoring. And one of the places in the service where we have the chance to do it is in the invocation. Those are those words that we say right at the very beginning, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And a good way to think about this is to think about God who made me, God who saved me, and the Spirit who moves me. And this is terribly terse, and it doesn't do it. 52 times a year working on these things, it might do it. But we've said something in this direction. Now let's try. I'm going to turn now, and I'm going to say, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. This is an old church, you can tell. And as soon as I've said the words, it's going to be very quiet in the church. And if you look around, you're going to see a lot of people looking around at you. Because not everybody knows what to do, but you know. And so you might keep looking at whatever you have there to look at, and then be thinking about, God, that was good that you made me. God, that was good that you saved me. And God, that was good that you sent the Spirit to help me. Are you ready? And then you would step into the other role as the one who is conducting the service and say, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And they would say, Amen. And it would be quiet in the church for the space of half an hour. 30 seconds, maybe. About as long as you could stand. But at this point, there would be a certain amount of involvement. Let me run on. This would then say, talk about what worship action is, talk about where in the liturgy the action can take place, and then the third point would be to make sure that the sacramental material, the homiletical material, the instructional material that is part of our liturgy is made understandable to the child. Not understandable in the sense of just knocking down the level of the words, but adapted in such a way that he is really ready to take it in, which is a subject all in itself. Well, that's all I want to say about the As It Was group. I think that something of this kind needs to be going on because within the framework of an every Sunday family service, the new generation of children will be growing up into an appreciation of what there is, what we have received. At the same time, if you have adults in that congregation who for 40 years, 50 years have been involved in this pattern and are possibly not acting, many of them will be involved either through their own children, possibly through their grandchildren, and will sit through this service for a number of years. What you would never be able to tell them as adults, they will take in by osmosis because you're talking to the children. And they will come out of this as intelligent worshipers. In the same way, if you have people who come from a non-liturgical denomination and really have not experienced what this all is that you are talking about, you can suggest to them that they work their way through the family service 1 year in their move up to the next category. Now, I used to say that it is not a good idea to subdivide the congregation too many ways. Because as soon as you have said this about the family service, someone will always bring up the youth, the teenage, roughly, bracket. And for many years, I have felt that they should work within the adult service, the non-family service. I don't think I believe that anymore. I think that the big accent on the small group as the place where the sense of community can develop makes it no longer so desirable to maintain these large groupings. I don't think that you can get away from the fact that the teenager is a totally different animal. If he has come up through the family service route, he will already have a background and premises that will serve him well in whatever kind of new thing might happen in an is-now grouping. If he has not had this kind of a background, he is certainly not going to be helped by being put in to the average kind of a celebration. He might be able to get something from the family service, although this depends on how well you're able to involve the teenager when you're really dealing with children who are younger than they. But I think that there is a possibility within a new structure that things could begin to happen. I think that if we continue the process as we are going about it now, in which we simply urge the teenager to come to the ordinary service, of course, what I say about the teenager is that much stronger if you're talking about the elementary school child. We are encouraging them to do the very thing that we don't want them to do, which is to do nothing. The Saturday Review not long ago had a picture of a mother looking in on her child who was supposed to be saying his bedtime prayers, and there he is lying relaxed in bed with his arms behind his head and a tape recorder going. He said, "I taped last night's prayer." And this is about the situation when children come into the present situation. I don't think that it's much different with the teenager than it is with the elementary school person. Sitting in the back of the choir at Neshota House, the Episcopal Seminary, a year and a half ago, where they begin every morning with the celebration of the Eucharist, it was interesting to see the whole back row of these fellows all wearing cassocks with wide leather belts, which hid a marvelous collection of things underneath. In the back choir pew, whenever any of the longer passages of the liturgy took on, they would pull out their paperbacks that they evidently had to read for class in the next hour, and they'd work their way along until it came closer to the place where they would be involved again, and they put the back, and then they were with it. And I don't think it was really unjustified. There were great sections there where they could do this much more rapidly than the actual phrasing would require. In any event, I would imagine that it should be possible in a parish that has a sizable number of young people to pick them up and to put them together in a group on Sunday. I think we do this in experiments like summer camps, LSD encounter schools, any of these things, where we attempt to say, within this kind of a situation, let's give them an experience in worship so that they know what we're talking about when we try to bring them back into the parish service. But that re-entry process is terribly difficult, and most of them really get scorched in an attempt to come back into the average situation, because they're conscious of the fact that they ought to be with it, but they don't find themselves actually able to. I'm not saying that it is something which is the fault of the circumstance. Sometimes it is. Oftentimes it is simply their own fault. In the very makeup of their own teenage nature, the very sense of what they are at that time, makes it impossible for an adult to say to him, well, you've got it all wrong. Variations are not going to solve this problem. Pretty soon you'll be tired of the variations. It doesn't make any sense to talk that way to a teenager. The only real way to approach it is to say, go ahead and try it. Experiment with the variations and test your own premise that they will, in this process, ultimately come out at the end where they are saying, please, let's do conference. We took a group of youth leaders in a two-week deal one time out at Colorado Springs, and there was a worship committee. Each day they were supposed to do a new thing. And this went pretty well for the first week. By the second week, you began to feel this. Everybody was grabbing for this novelty and that novelty, until at the end, everybody was very, very glad to be able to move into something that was set, that was a pattern, that was holistic, with which they could really begin to operate. Now, if this is really a valid kind of an experience, then it would seem to me we should have no hesitancy in actually setting aside one of the morning services on a Sunday for this kind of thing to be happening with the young people. I'm saying this specifically on Sunday because I would think that this would be one of the ways that we could help them recognize the seriousness of this gathering together of the community on this day of the Lord. If there were three services in a parish, and the early service were the family service, the middle service might very well be this service, which would be the Is Now service. I think that there should be recognized the possibility of a crossover participation in this, that there would deliberately be parents who would want to be worshiping with their teenagers. One would have to work carefully at this so that there would be no sense of, we are here to watch what you're doing, or any sense the other way of, let us show you what we can do. There would have to be a deliberate move in on this particular group to make sure that the doctrine of the church is actually being taught, and that through the small group approach, there would be an even better result in terms of helping people comprehend their relationship to the brother. Within that kind of a group, I think all kinds of planning material could happen. It could be as tame as working with committees on the significance, first of all, of whatever the propers for the day might be. They might be propers in a churchier sense. They might be some other kind of theme, which would be drawn from a totally different kind of orientation. But they would be helped to see the validity of setting up certain of these obvious liturgical modes by which something could be done. Liturgical in the sense of some kind of corporate pattern by which the group could participate. And then they could scatter, and one could be making a banner or could be working on some kind of way to express in symbol what it is that they're trying to say in the service. Another could be working with artistic expressions, maybe as simple as drawing up some kind of bulletin or some kind of background kind of thing. Well, you can work through a number of these things and be aware of the type of experiment that could be carried on in such a situation. I am not specifically here attempting at all to suggest things that could be done. I am being very careful not even to mention the word music in connection with this, although it is quite obvious to some of you that maybe you would say that word as the kind of thing that could happen here. But obviously, there would be a recognized situation in which, go ahead, work with various experiments within this situation. And I think that there would come about, as a result of what is going on there, the desire on their part to experiment as well with some of the things that are the best of the tradition. And this in itself would bring them, I think, to a matter of growth and to a growing appreciation of some of the things that would now follow. Well, this brings me then to the third, and this one is very brief. I would simply suggest that the third thing would be the ever shall be grouping. I am not sure, but what at this point we come to exactly that place where Dr. Peepcorn stopped this morning when we talk about the shape of the future. I think that at this stage a person would say that particular service should be the pulling together of the best kind of things that have come out of the experience of that particular community. Out of the family service, obviously better sermons are going to come. If for no other reason than that the clergyman is forced to face up to the fact that if he doesn't come through, he's going to be ignored by his audience. The sermon that he preaches at 11 o'clock is going to be a lot better than the one he thought he was going to preach before he preached it at the family service. It may only come out at first in terms of, let me tell you the cute thing one of the kids said in the family service this morning. Even that would be a relief, because it would be a fresh illustration and he wouldn't be using the podium again for a change. But I think beyond this, the liveliness of his presentation would begin to grow. In the same way, there would come possibly out of the experiments that would be going on in the is-now grouping, the kinds of things that begin to take on permanent value and that the other group would recognize as useful and wish to incorporate in their own experience. I think that within the family service, there would be a good deal of experimentation with those things which are traditionally liturgical. I think, for example, of an offertory procession. And it would not take very long before all of these better things would move up into the ever shall be service, and they would become normal for that parish. The result would be that the, as it was in the beginning service, would be quite the same as the ever shall be service. All of the best things would be happening in the family service, but they would be happening on a different level. In the ever shall be service, you would have finally attained that feeling of beatific blessedness that a basketball team arrives at when they have finally quit being coached and the coach blowing the whistle at every scrimmage, and they get to a game where the rules really apply. You keep going until the game is over. And we would move into that service then as people who know what it is to worship and how to use the form we're using to worship. We would move in as a people of God who are conscious of what the church really is. And we would be reached as adult worshipers with material that would be polysemous, reaching us on many levels of meaning, enabling us to respond on many levels of meaning. And we could, with the brotherhood, really adore the Most High. That's my idea.